Walt up to the road rage. We are back. Jonathan Craig, I'm coming to you. You know, Ramona, the New York Post is amazing. You see some of this stuff, you just like, you think like each day this stuff gets crazier and crazier. How about this, Ramona? This is a sidebar. Socialist New York lawmaker defends shoplifters, says they have a biological need for products.
Oh, come on.
What are we going to do? We've got to get rid of these people.
You have to punish people when they steal.
They have a biological need for the products.
Wait till they steal from you. Maybe they'll have them arrested.
Right. Then you'll see whether you still have a biological need. So listen to the rest of this, Ramona. The Elder Robinson, okay, he's a treasurer, blah, blah, blah. He was admitted to the bar in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, specializes in transportation, commercial, construction, and insurance law. He is currently a managing attorney at Meyer, Darrow, Buckler, Babinek, and Eck, based in Pittsburgh. In a statement, the law firm told the Post, it is aware of the charges filed against Robinson, the allegations concerning Mr. Robinson individually, and do not involve the firm, its clients, or the legal services provided by the firm. The statement continued. Oh, he's fired.
He's so fired.
The firm is reviewing circumstances surrounding the matter. Oh, yeah, they're reviewing it, all right. They're trying to save their own clients and face. Penn State announced Monday that it is placing Delta Upsilon on interim suspension while investigations conducted, blah, blah, blah. Prosecutors claim Thomas Robinson, a member of the Delta Upsilon fraternity, and Nassau County resident Agostino Abatiello, a Sigma Chi frat brother, were the alleged ringleaders of the drug trading enterprise. Abatiello, 24, Ramona, lives in a spacious single-family home in Westbury, valued at $1.4 million, according to property records. Of course they do.
What, this one on the right?
Yeah. Spacious single family $1.4 million home.
And yeah, he's the one 24 on the right. Years old.
Yeah. And I'm seeing the home shot of the other family here with Paul Robinson, an unnamed son, Laura Nee Robinson, an unnamed daughter, and Thomas Robinson pictured in a photo posted on Facebook on April 10th, 2023. Yeah. Yeah, nice little family picture. Yeah, nice little family picture. They got the two that aren't involved, one of maybe too young. They've got their faces blocked out in this photo. Well, soon they'll be able to remove that last son completely from the photo.
They have to take him
out of the little family photo entirely.
Yeah, they're going to have to.
But you got
to
take dad.
Dad's a new photo.
Dad's got to be out of the family photo, too.
Yeah, how about
the
that?
The only one whose face is still going to be visible is the mom. Her face is still going to be visible. The other two kids have their faces blocked off.
She's going to divorce and take everything.
That's exactly right. She's of course going to claim not to have any knowledge of any of it, which maybe she doesn't. But we'll see. Jonathan on the Pratt Injury Lawyers phone line. Jonathan, how are you? Good to have you.
I'm good, Walt. I'm good. So I was listening to Faxon this morning, and there was a very heated debate around Clemson quarterback rankings, and that got me thinking, who are the best Clemson quarterbacks of my lifetime? How do they rank compared to each other?
Okay.
Now I'm on the younger side.
What was the basis of the debate? What was the gist of it?
People got really upset at Faxon for him insulting Charlie Whitehurst, and Mickey had to go in there and chew him out. That was the gist of it.
I'm sorry. What about Charlie? Wait, I'm losing. What about Charlie Whitehurst?
It started when Faxon said Charlie wasn't that amazing because he was just looking at the stats, and Mickey was kind of apparently glaring at him saying that.
Well, look, I don't know anything about it. I shouldn't even ask because it's all sort of hearsay, and I don't mean you're not relaying the story correctly, but people are entitled to their opinions. You know, Charlie Whitehurst beat South Carolina four times, but he also never faced a South Carolina team that was any good.
Yeah.
In other words, the South Carolina teams that Taj Boyd faced were light years better than the South Carolina teams that Charlie Whitehurst was facing.
Yeah, but that just got me thinking about who are the best Clemson quarterbacks in my lifetime. How do all the starting quarterbacks we've had in my life stack up compared to each other? It's a pretty clear-cut top four of Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence, Taj Boyd, and Charlie Whitehurst, and then everyone else. And then at the bottom is probably DJ or Cole Stout. But I was just wondering, what would you say are the top 10 Clemson quarterbacks of your lifetime?
I would have to think about that, Jonathan. I wouldn't just give you. When I put lists together, I seriously consider all elements of it, and I evaluate it. And so I wouldn't do that off the top of my head. It wouldn't be fair to people that I discount. I think in terms of the time frame that you're talking about, I think Taj Boyd's the most underrated quarterback maybe in Clemson football history. He had a lot of things that he had to combat going up against, including a defense that wasn't very good, an offensive line that wasn't very good. He's going up against great South Carolina defenses. So he had some challenges, but statistically he put up major numbers. I basically think you have the right order. For me, at the top of that list in the modern era, I would say Deshaun Watson's first, Trevor Lawrence is second, Taj is third, but again a very competitive third, and then probably Whitehurst fourth. I think you basically had it right. I put a poll up at one time about Deshaun Watson versus Trevor Lawrence, thinking that the result would be close. The result was a landslide for Watson. It was over 80%, whatever it was. I was actually astonished. Now, obviously, some things have changed in the way people may remember those two players. And so if you were to conduct a similar poll today, I think the result would be different, but Watson would probably still win.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. My opinion of the two has always been Watson had the much higher ceiling where he could just take over games compared to Trevor and will teams to win, whereas Trevor, maybe it's because he never really had the need to do that because every game he played, blew teams out.
But, right, right. If you win by
a – he won that Ohio State
yeah.
game.
If you right,
game.
Yeah. Look, if you win by a million points, you don't need last second miracles.
Exactly, but it also felt like Trevor was way more consistent game to game. Like you'd occasionally have the game from Deshaun Watson where it'd be like at NC State game, he threw what, four interceptions or something like that.
Yeah. Pittsburgh game.
Whereas it never really felt like Trevor would do that. It always, and again, maybe that's just because of the team quality.
The reality is they were both incredible. They are both once in a lifetime type guys, and Clemson had two of them.
I agree, and I agree with what you're saying about Taj Boyd. He went up against the best team South Carolina ever had. I agree, he's underrated. He's one of my two favorite players of all time. Him and CJ Spiller. I've met Taj Boyd. He's one of the nicest people I've ever met.
Yeah, but he can't sing for crap.
Great
so
guy.
Don't ever let him tell you that he can.
But yeah, I was just curious what your thoughts on it would be.
Yeah, it's a good job, Jonathan. Yeah, I think you're right. I would have to think about the whole history in assembling that type of list. And the reason that's challenging is because the game was a completely different game. Stats can't even enter the conversation when you consider the way back Clemson quarterbacks because you weren't playing the same game. You're playing a different game. That's always a tough evaluation. Like even today, the numbers that have been put up, and it's come back to earth a little bit, but the numbers that have been put up, in this modern era in the NFL, from a quarterback standpoint, from a yardage standpoint, are really misleading in terms of in any sort of comparison to the past. And it basically the numbers became artificially inflated as the game changed. And so, you have to consider those things. I mean, you got a lot of modern quarterbacks who have posted massive yardage numbers, but they're not great players. Jason in Columbia. Jason, how are you, Jason? Good to have you.
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny. That was actually a pretty hilarious show. You would have loved it. Mickey was so enraged, he had to come into the studio and set the young whippersnapper straight. It is something that I think younger generations don't understand. It's in every sport, the stat inflation, and people call them accounting stats now. Yeah. You know, people roll out of bed in the NBA and, oh, look how many assists this person got. And then you turn on the tape and it's like, wow, the shooter had the ball for 12 seconds before he let go of it, and they still gave the other guy the assist on the pass. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you know, I actually saw a clip this week where Dwayne Wade was saying, hey, man, I played in the league when they had handshaking and when they didn't. And let me tell you, it was a lot easier to score when they didn't have
handshaking. Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean,
with football.
Without question.
You know, receivers getting off the line of scrimmage. But no, I
but again, like even in a Taj Charlie Whitehurst comparison, I mean, Charlie owned South Carolina, but he didn't own the South Carolina that Taj went against. You know,
South Carolina
that Taj went against was a completely different animal. You know,
those were the three best teams they ever had.
Right.
Period. I know their 84 team was good, but those were the three best teams they had: offense and defense, quarterback, Spurrier.
Right.
You know, all of the components, you know, they were monsters. You got to give them credit. Of course, that seems like 100 years ago, so it's easier for me to do that. But anyway, I agree with you. It irritates me on Taj's behalf that people downplay him because he had the misfortune of going up against those teams. And let's not forget, 2011 and 12, terrible defenses.
Oh, yeah.
And then 2013, defense finally showed a pulse, and then we turned the ball over six times.
Yep. And I'll still say, I say this to this day, I said it the next day when I came in after the game, but I have never seen a quarterback, I've said this a million times, play a tougher game than he played against LSU. I thought LSU intentionally tried to knock him out of that game over and over and over again, and he just kept getting up, and then 4th and 16 happened.
And people say, well, he didn't beat like the big teams, and it's like you're full of it. Like, he beat a top five Virginia Tech team twice in 2011, including in the ACC championship, which we hadn't won in 20 years. If it's so easy, we didn't win it for 20
again,
years.
Again, the totality of his team wasn't good enough, Jason. The defense stunk, and the offensive line stunk.
Yeah, and then he beat top 10 LSU in that Peach Bowl game, which was one of the toughest displays I've ever seen. He beats a top 10 Ohio State in the Orange Bowl, which we hadn't won since 1981. And then he also beat a top 5 Georgia team to open the season. So, I mean, my man had plenty of big games. Yeah. I mean, what a stud. I love him.
He's a personal friend of mine, and I think he's a great person, and he's doing an incredible job now with the team as well. He's just a terrific all-around
I heard some big-time programs tried to hire him away.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
Off-season.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. And you know, the only real issue with him is he can't sing at all, but he thinks he can.
Hey, I wouldn't you love to see someone earlier this morning did make a great point that how Woody Dantzler was like ahead of the curve, you know, first QB to ever throw for 2,000 and rush for 1,000 way back 25 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I have mixed feelings about that
because he would fit into today's game.
Yeah. My dilemma with Woody is almost across the board, all of his best games were against the worst teams he played. And there were a couple exceptions, but that's my issue. I think he was limited as a thrower, but would he have fit in with some of the modern offenses? Yeah, he was a great athlete. There's no question about that.
Yeah, man, I still remember that punt return he had in the preseason NFL. You remember the Cowboys against the Niners? Yeah. And he tiptoed the sideline.
Yep.
And I'm one of the 80%, Walt, who says Deshaun Watson. I mean, I love Trevor, but it I don't even have to think about it. It's Deshaun Watson. I mean, in college, he was just magical.
But let me ask you this, because I think it is too, but is part of that he did it first? You know, it goes back to what Jonathan said before. Is part of this the way it happened? I mean, in other words, do we give Deshaun Watson more credit for winning the game on the final play of the game and beating Alabama, and it was the first one since Danny and all that stuff, versus Trevor, who won easily?
I never saw Deshaun in a big moment have a game like Trevor did against LSU, where Trevor was just off. Yeah. I mean, he still had good stats at the end of the day, but he was off that night. We should have been up on them multiple scores in the first half, and he just was missing
This is where you get carried away now, because there's no way that Clemson team was beating that LSU team. There's just no way.
Well, I'm just saying, he missed T. Higgins. I didn't see Deshaun do that.
Right, but the part, just in terms of that game conversation, is that we don't talk about is the fact that Venables just got torched. I mean, LSU had 650 yards
Once
offense.
Once Scalzi left the game, it was rough.
It was going to be rough anyway. That offense is one of the best offenses I've ever seen, and they had just frigging dudes everywhere. I mean,
they did. They were one in a million team that came together. Boom. I mean, they were awesome, no doubt.
But yeah, I would go Deshaun too. But I still think that part of it is we always sort of, I think, more fondly remember what happens first, and then I think part of it is that there's this image of Deshaun Watson was the guy who could make winning plays at the end, and Trevor couldn't. The problem with that notion is that Trevor made winning plays an entire football game in which Clemson stomped a mud hole in Alabama 44-18. You know, so.
Yeah.
Or was it 44-16?
And to be clear, I love Trevor, so no Trevor slander. We were so lucky.
Yeah, man. I would go Watson,
Robert,
too.
We may never see them again.
Yeah.
We may never see them
probably
again.
Probably not. I mean, they're two historical all-time greats. Probably not.
And I love Taj, dude. He's third for me right there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think he's the most underrated guy in the whole mix. And you
maybe
know,
the best deep ball thrower?
Yeah, and he didn't have, you know, the totality of the personnel that those other two quarterbacks had.
Imagine him with one of those defenses from the 16-18 seasons.
Yeah. Yeah, if you do this, if you insert Taj Boyd into 2018, Clemson 100% wins the national championship with no drop off.
I believe that for sure. Absolutely, I believe that.
Yep.
Yep.
Good talking, Jason, as always. Excellent work. Got his little South Carolina shot in. Trey, I'm coming to you on the other side. You can get in. 654-7627. We'll be back.
The countdown is on. 17 days until Clemson Tiger football. Presented by Ingles.
Ingles. Low prices.
Love the savings.
They're going to go eye set in a big, heavy package. Look, Klubnik will check up under center. Turn, hand it off. Randall looking for the end zone. And he's going to fight his way in. Touchdown. How about that, friends?
105.5. 97.5. The Roar. Where every day is game day.
Hey, let me tell you about my friend Nick Lavery, 1011 Tiger Boulevard, Suite 500, right behind Mellow Mushroom in Clemson. Nick Lavery, Clemson's local attorney, has been helping folks in the upstate of South Carolina for over a quarter century. That's right. Nick's been serving our Clemson upstate community for more than 25 years. That includes DUI. You've been charged with DUI. It's a devastating event. Can disrupt your entire life. Can ruin your life. It doesn't mean you're guilty. It means you're going to have to go to court and face the charges. You're going to need a quality South Carolina DUI. You have to drop the Pablo Pledge Escobar deal when you learn how these people got busted, Ramona. And by the way, maybe the shirtless dude with the woman in the car was not the dumbest person around. This is how they got busted, Ramona. At Penn State, frat bro charged in a cocaine trafficking ring was busted after authorities were tipped off that he was accepting Venmo payments for drugs under his own name.
What an idiot.
Authorities were told by confidential informant that a male using the nickname T-Rob is selling large amounts of cocaine from the fraternity house using Venmo. alleged drug pin, kingpin, T-Rob, was accepting payment through a Venmo account with the username Tom Robinson, his actual name.
How stupid.
So we actually have a guy who's dumber than the shirtless guy who knocked the woman's car over.
That's lawyer's son, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's the lawyer's son.
Yeah, yeah.
He's getting good advice, apparently, from dad. Yeah, use your own name, son. I don't know. I don't know if dad gave him that advice or not. But, hey, maybe they could share a cell together. Oh. Allegedly. Trey. How are you, Trey? Good to have you.
What's up, Walt?
Hey, Trey.
Just calling to talk about the Deshaun versus Trevor conversation. I personally, obviously they're both great, but I think I have to go with Trevor because both of their numbers are very similar throughout their career, and Trevor had more than half the amount of turnovers compared to Deshaun.
Yeah, less than half.
But
let me ask you this: he played on a more dominant team in 2018 than Deshaun ever played on. Do you feel like Deshaun had to take some chances at times, or at least felt that way? Like he felt he had to win games because he was going to be involved in more close games than Trevor was. Maybe Trevor didn't need to take those chances.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that, but part of me also thinks that Trevor, that 2018 season, Justin Ross, and I mean, that was his, he just came out of nowhere that game, and then Mike Williams, T. Higgins, sorry. I think that Deshaun maybe had to take some more chances, especially on the ground. I mean, obviously, Deshaun statistically was a much better runner. I think he had over 1,000 more yards than Trevor throughout his career. But Trevor also had ETN, so I don't know if Trevor had to run as much, even though he could. The Ohio State game, and when people talk about the big moments, you know that Deshaun was better than Trevor in big moments. Man, that Ohio State game just kind of defeats that narrative.
Yeah.
With that scramble that.
And from an NFL perspective, the NFL viewed Trevor as the much better talent. I mean, Trevor went number one overall, and he was talked about as a generational talent.
Trevor also made the playoffs 3 times, and Deshaun only made it twice.
Yeah.
So there's also that. And then the LSU game, I really can't put that on Trevor. I really feel like, I hate to go to the blame the coaches thing, but I mean, that was just a embarrassment of, just not running the ball against LSU. I mean, that was probably.
By his own admission, he did not play well in that game, and he really didn't. But I think there was also a lot of pressure on him to play well in that game because you knew that LSU was going to score a million points, and you basically knew you had to match. You're the first person, because again, when I ran this poll, like this is a number of years back, but over 80% of the people said Deshaun Watson. But look, I think it's a fair argument. I mean, I again, Trevor won more easily. He did, and I think people.
I
think people so fondly remember the way Clemson won the first title with Deshaun hitting Renfrow and coming back against Alabama.
Yeah.
And I think that's a hard memory to defeat in terms of this argument.
Because Trevor's win was such a blowout
so dominant. Exactly. So he didn't have that moment, in a championship game. So you're 100% right. Good job,
and
Trey.
And also we have to think too, Clemson under Trevor, they were beating teams so bad. I mean, this is a lot of Trevor's stats were just first and second and a couple minutes in the third quarter too. Like a lot of people don't understand that. And then the last thing that I would say, and this is Clemson football in general, is over the past 5 or 6 years, I think that our offense has been so bad that our defense has actually taken. Now, obviously, last year the defense was terrible, but I would argue that even back then, Clemson's defense was really good. But you know, we were. I specifically remember. I think we beat Georgia Tech one game, like 50-something to 38. We were. Our offense was so good that our defense was able to give up, you know, 30 points a game, and we were still beating teams by 25 or 30 points. So I think that's what we have to try to get back to, is that explosive offense and you know, give our defense a chance, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the reality is in terms of this conversation about Trevor and Deshaun, I'm not even 100% sure how we got on this to begin with, but in terms of that conversation, I think the real truth is that those poll numbers should have always been more like 50-50. Because
I think so too.
I don't think you can really separate them. I think they were both incredible. I thought the numbers of 80 to 20 or whatever it was were really surprising at the time. I was not so surprised Deshaun won because of that factor that we talked about, but I was surprised at the way he won. Again, some things have happened post-college that might change the way that vote would be if it occurred today, but I think you're absolutely justified in making a Trevor case, and you did.
I'm in on this. Is I think that if you had to ask me, I would say, you know, they're both great, and I think Deshaun's the better dual threat quarterback, and I think Trevor's the better pocket.
A label he hated, by the way. Deshaun hated being labeled dual threat.
Yeah, but I gotta give you know, Deshaun the nod, and you know, running the ball and making plays with his feet, and I got to give Trevor the nod for, you know, more yards
pure
per attempt
passer.
and just a better pocket passer.
Yep, it's a good job, Trey.
Very fair.
Yep, excellent. Well done. Yep, I think he makes a good case. I mean, I think the vote should have always been more balanced than it was. Ramona, have you seen this? This is non-sports. Have you seen this Lindsey Clancy deal? The woman who killed, allegedly strangled her three children?
No.
I can't go anywhere without hearing this, like, news and everything every night. This is such an insane story. You know me, Ramona. Like, anytime I hear something like this, I want them put to death, like, in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
This deal here, she might go free. She might wind up in some sort of mental health facility because the defense team is actually making a really strong case. This would not be good for the greater good if she does. But the case is that they put her on like 20 different medicines, like 5 different doctors, nobody checking with each other. She begged social services for help. She pleaded for somebody to help her. She told people what she was feeling and what she was afraid she might do. Social services never came to collect the children. I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to be surprised if this is the first case like this, because normally they're just non-starters. This notion of, you know, some sort of mental health issue caused you to do this. These are normally non-starters. It's starting to seem like this may be the first case ever that's not. And it seems like an entire breakdown of the complete mental health system that failed her at every step of the way, and in turn, obviously failed 3 young children. My bigger concern about this right now is not so much this. It's that if this happens, this is going to set precedent for every other nut case to kill their children and say that the system failed them too. You know, and so that's my concern about it. But man, this is one strange case, and even I think the husband is remarried, I believe remarried. I don't know. There's even a strange element to that. But this is. When you actually listen to it, this whole thing is like just sort of heartbreaking. This is not, you know, Susan Smith drove her children into the water. You know, this is, I don't know, man. I don't know. I, just listening to it, and I've heard a lot of this, it's all secondhand, but I've heard a lot of it on political shows. I'm not going to be surprised if the defense team wins this case. Then what it means moving forward, I think, is a big problem if this happens. It's all a big problem anyway. There are three children dead, you know, and
yeah.
And at some level, she's still got to bear responsibility for this. But it does seem like, from some of the things you're hearing, that she was pleading and begging for help, and nobody helped her. And this putting someone on 20 drugs and five different sources, you know, who knows what her condition really was? You know, I don't know, man. It's a tragic thing. The whole thing is just, you know, absolutely tragic. All right, we have lots to get to. One segment to do it. Romano, we've gone real far on our comparison of the AP poll to the Road Rage poll.
Yeah.
What have we done, like three teams, four teams? What number are we at? We'll get to your calls on the other side, too. We'll be back.
What's going on, everybody? Sam Jones here. I'm excited to serve as the lead commentator for the Tri-County Technical College High School Football Game of the Week presented by Ingles Markets again this season. As per our tradition, our week one matchup will be easily at Pickens to kick the campaign off.
I don't know what her mental state was. You know, maybe she just didn't want to kill anybody, you know, and that's what it sort of sounds like. And Rob writes, postpartum depression's no joke. My buddy and his in-laws kept the child away from his wife for a while when she should have been breastfeeding for the child's safety. Now they're a very happy family 20 years later. The system failed this lady. I don't think she should walk at all, but now she's going to spend the rest of her life in a hospital. I just think it's going to be a really interesting decision, because when you hear all the facts of it, the facts that we can know as, you know, sort of secondhand information, it's the whole thing is like, the whole thing is just heartbreaking, disgusting, all of it, for a whole myriad of reasons. Again, normally I'm like, you know, I'm like the kill him guy, you know, kill him, get it over with right now. But when you hear this, I mean, this system really does seem to have failed this woman. And she reached out numerous times to different sources, explaining what she was going through and what she was afraid she was going to do. And nobody came to help. You know, they just didn't aid her. Instead, they made it worse. You know, they put her on all these drugs. The drug collection is just insanity itself. Like, who's giving her all these drugs? I mean, these are doctors. You know, the whole system failed. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, I'm normally as black and white on this kind of stuff as any human could be, but I got to admit, there's some gray in this. At the very least, there are a whole lot of people who share blame.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Right. If she's still going to be found guilty, there are also a whole lot of other people who are guilty in this mess too. All the doctors who prescribed all this nonsense, the failure to check with each other and the medical records, that's all available to every doctor now. You know, you have these MyChart things that you can, that's all available. That should have been known, but it somehow wasn't. So there was no dot connecting. And then, you know, in the desperation and reaching out and actually telling these people what she was afraid she was going to do, and no one came to get the kids or anything. I don't know. It just seems like there's an awful lot here, and I don't know how it winds up. And like I said, I'm sort of afraid that this case will set precedent that will allow others to take advantage of this if this case goes that way. That's actually my main concern right now. But it's crazy. 940 says, is PJ Fleck sitting on a warm seat, or is he looking to move? I think he's headed for a really good year. I've ranked Minnesota. I was actually sort of impressed that the AP poll voters had Minnesota and their others receiving votes. I think Minnesota has a really good running back room, two powerful running backs, and I think they have an elite quarterback, a future round one quarterback in Drake Lindsay, assuming that Fleck and company free him to be the best that he can be, because he is a prototype NFL passing quarterback, and they just have to turn him loose. They have managed to keep him fairly well hidden to this point. This is the year that they need to turn him loose. Plus, I think the schedule is pretty Minnesota favorable. I mean, I think when I rank them, you have my ranking, Ramona. We're not going to get to all that today. We're going to have to save some of that for tomorrow. Where did I have Minnesota?
Minnesota 18.
Okay, and again, that's going to be higher than anybody else has. Go. I mean, I may be the only one to rank them. Look up their schedule for me. Look at Minnesota's schedule. 9-4 says, so what's Minnesota's record? I think it's like 9-3. Again, I did my ranking like 2 weeks ago, and I don't remember every specific reason for what I thought at the time. But we'll take a look at their schedule. But I think their schedule was pretty favorable. And again, I really like the combination of quarterback with the two running backs. So, go ahead.
Okay, their first game is Eastern Illinois.
Okay, 1-0.
Mississippi State.
I mean, this is such a strange game to me. That's at home?
Yes.
I mean, I like Mississippi State, too. I mean, I've given them out as an overplay. Their number was 4.5. There's a lot of that 4.5 stuff going around. I give out Syracuse over 4.5. I give out Mississippi State over 4.5. I give out North Carolina under 4.5. I got a lot of 4.5s. We got to go over that stuff tomorrow too. Where we stand, because we have to post that stuff on the website too. I think at home they win that game, but I do not think that'll be easy. And I will say this: they're going to try and out physical Mississippi State, but they better be careful, because they're going to have to score some points to win that game. They're not going to win that game in the Fleck, let's not let Lindsey throw and try and win, 17-14. You're not beating Mississippi State in that game. You're going to have to score 30 to win that game, at least 30. Maybe 30-27, something like that. That's how you're going to have to win that game. I'm going to say they win. So that's game two, 2-0.
And then they have Akron at home.
3-0.
At Washington.
That's a tough spot, but I'm going to give them a half. 3.5.
Michigan at home.
I sort of think they win this game, but I'll give them another half here. 4.
At Purdue.
5.
Iowa at home.
6.
At Indiana.
6.
UCLA at home.
7.
At Penn State.
Seven and a half.
Northwestern at home.
8.5.
And at Wisconsin.
9.5. So that's how it came out. That's how I got to this point. That's a workable schedule. It's a very workable schedule for a team with potentially two NFL running backs and a potential round one NFL quarterback. So I think that's very, very doable. That's why I like Minnesota. So I don't think Fleck is in trouble. Tex just said, after their quarterback debate this morning, it then evolved into a debate about what was acceptable footwear when you're at work. Sandals, slides, or flip-flops. Well, see, so it ended in a friendly manner. That's what we like.
Yeah.
It ended in a friendly manner. The answer to that question is it's all acceptable because no one can see your feet.
That's true.
Remember Tony Kornheiser? That's exactly what came to mind. Do you remember Kornheiser? Remember how he was criticizing, who was it, that he was basically saying looked like a hooker? Was it Hannah Storm?
Oh, I think so.
Storm, right? That he was basically saying dress like a hooker. And then there was a broadcast, because he does a show, and he's sitting behind the table, and they cut to him. And Dune had like, yeah, what did he have, like pink spandex pants on or some crap?
Something like that.
With what do you call those shoes? What do you call those?
Clogs?
Clogs. Yeah, yeah, he had like clogs. Pink clogs on. And like, you know, so he was actually dressing more like a hooker than Hannah Storm was. Except you didn't know it because he's went behind the table. Now, look. There's a part of this where, okay, I don't care whether you're behind the table or not, right? You can't be wearing, like, whatever those pants were he was wearing and wearing, like, pink clogs or whatever that was. You can't be wearing that behind the table or not.
No, you can't.
No, what are you, Marv Albert? You have a bra on too? I mean,
Oh, yeah.
Remember Marv Albert? You know, I just for the rest of his career, you just wonder how anybody worked with him without wanting to reach over and rip open his shirt to see if he was packing, see if he had a bra on. There's no way around it. It would be, yes, you're one of the greatest announcers of all time, but are you wearing a bra?
That's what we want to know.
That's what we want to know. We're done. I'll see you tomorrow. Walt Tiptula Road Rage.
WCCP FM 105.5 Clemson, Greenville Anderson, WAHT AM 1560, Cowpens, 97.5 Spartanburg. We are the Roar.
Opportunity to capitalize on it. They should do that right now. For the ESPN Radio.